From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As we continue our coverage of the She the People Summit, on September 20th, 2018, in San Francisco, California, we turn now to Linda Sarsour. She's a co-chair of the historic Women's March 2017 and the former executive director of the Arab American Association of New York. A rising star in political activism, Sarsour has also been targeted by the alt-right and vilified for her strong criticism of President Trump and her support for Palestinian rights. She spoke at She the People and was a guest on a live broadcast on KPFA Pacifica Radio in Berkeley that I co-hosted along with writer, journalist, and activist Antonia Yuhas. Special thanks to KPFA Pacifica Radio for sponsoring this coverage.
Linda, thank you so much for joining us. Antonia Yuhas, we really, a pleasure to have you with us. So we have been playing the summit live for our audience. They heard you speak from the stage. And one thing I'd really like to ask you to speak more on is first the Kavanaugh hearings. You stood up, you were arrested at Kavanaugh, the initial hearings. What do you feel about what's happening right now with whether or not Professor Blasey Ford should be testifying, the fact that they've called the Senate hearing on Monday? What do you feel about this process and this moment?
I mean, I feel like we're doing 1991 all over again, except what's different now is that we're not going to take it this time. We have been organizing since the first day of the hearings. Myself and Jennifer Epps Addison were the first women to stand up loudly and boldly and proclaim this to be a mockery of justice. And we continue to organize. In fact, there are people, as we speak right now, in Washington, D.C., occupying Chuck Grassley's office, occupying Jeff Flake's office. And, you know, we believe that we really instilled the courage in our senators to speak up, because they had plenty of time, the Democrats, too, to speak up before the hearing started. But it took them seeing women ready to risk it all for this, for them to gain the courage in that hearing to speak. And Dr. Ford, I mean, my heart just goes out to her, because she knew exactly what would happen if she came forward, but she knew it was her responsibility in this moment as an American to put herself on the line, and that is what a patriot is, and Christine Ford is a patriot. But we hope that we created the political will for her. I hope that she saw us in there and know that if she decides to, because it is her right to decide, if she does it, I love her and respect her. If she doesn't do it, I still love and respect her. That we will be there for her. We will be there in the hundreds to stand with her. And I'm very proud of her and hope she knows that, you know, we're here to do whatever she needs.
What is at stake for women and for Muslim Americans and for brown people if we have decades of a right-wing conservative majority on the Supreme Court? We're not hearing the stakes enough in among senators and committee members around this fight.
Oh, the stakes are high, and particularly for people of color and women. I mean, reversal of Roe versus Wade, you know, taking our reproductive rights away from us. Immigrant rights are on the table. Voter rights, affirmative actions on the table. I mean,
Muslim
LGBTQ
ban.
Rights. I mean, for God's sakes, we already saw what the Supreme Court is already capable of, where they reaffirmed bigotry and Islamophobia with the Muslim ban. So we already know as Muslims what could happen. And having another conservative right wing, at least with the Muslim ban, there was a toss-up. We didn't actually know exactly which way it would go. But with Kavanaugh, it's very clear to me that we could potentially add countries to the Muslim ban. It is an absolute disaster if the American people allow for this president, who should not have the privilege nor the right, while he's under federal investigation, to be even appointing a Supreme Court justice.
What are you seeing in the needs for organizing? Because when you spoke from the stage, you said women of color have been leading, are leading. We need everyone else to get out of the way. To what extent is that happening? How successful has organizing been among women, being led by women of color, in resistance to Kavanaugh, in resistance to Trump, and organizing to get progressive women candidates elected?
Oh, it's absolutely been very successful. There's always some folks who try to distract us along the way, but with the Kavanaugh hearings, a lot of the strategy that we're seeing, the civil disobedience, is something that has been added over the course of the last year and a half. Marching is not enough under fascism. Rallying is not enough under fascism. And we had to request from white women to come get trained with us and engage in an act of civil disobedience. One of the first acts of civil disobedience that hundreds of white women took was June 28th of this year. Around the family separation issue. And it was the largest women-led civil disobedience in American history. 653 women got arrested in the Hart Building. And it was one of the most inspirational elections I've ever been a part of. And white women said, if I knew this is what it was and this is all I had to risk, I would have done this 100 times before. And now they're coming back and getting arrested with us at the Kavanaugh hearings. We got 209 women who got arrested during the first week of hearings. There are more that are getting arrested today. We will be there again on Monday because we need to escalate. This is a matter of life and death for some communities. It is a matter of freedom and no freedom. And we really need more people to join us in Washington, D.C.
So do you feel that these elections are a culmination or the beginning of something? In the midterms, there's so much being put on the midterms.
Yeah. The electoral politics for me is never the end or the beginning. And I need people to be very clear here. Even if we win back the House, which I know we will do, what happens after we win back the House? What is the agenda? Who is going to be centered? What bills are we going to focus on as a majority? And then when we go into 2020, who sets the agenda for the first 100 days of that next presidency that we hope is not Donald Trump? So for me, it's about building a strategy and a narrative and an agenda that is set by the people. And the folks that we're electing in are accountable to us, not to those other members of Congress, not to the establishment. They are going to be accountable to the people who put them there.
What do you hope those bills are? What do you hope that 100-day agenda is of this new Congress?
Number one, we have to figure out what we're going to do with the DACA recipients. We have to find a way, and Congress has power to reinstate the DACA program, protections for DACA, protections for undocumented people. Congress actually has the power to repeal the Muslim ban from the perspective of funding and basically gutting out the enforcement piece of the Muslim ban. There's a lot of power that actually Congress has that we have to remind them that they do as the people. Issues around protecting health care, right? Reproductive rights, appropriations on ensuring that groups like Planned Parenthood and other women's groups who do access to affordable health care have the resources that they need as we continue to fight this administration. There's so much that they can do, and we're here to help them because we know what needs to be done. Sometimes Congress has to realize that we know what we're saying and we know what needs to happen, and they need to listen to us. And I think these new members of Congress, many of whom do not have competitive November races, so we have to realize that we already know, generally speaking, who's going to Congress. The Rashidas, the Ilhans, the Johannas, the Ayanas, the Alexandrias, those women are ready. They're ready to join the Pramilas of Congress, other progressives, Rokana and others. And I think we're going to see a lot of bold, progressive ideas coming out of Congress.
Linda, you were saying earlier from stage, and Rashida was alluding to it as well, that women of color need to embrace who we are instead of shying away from it. And often, having, you know, if you've lived any time in this country, we have been told by society to tamp that down, to Americanize ourselves, to make ourselves palatable to white America. But there's a shift now, isn't there? And I'm wondering how important you think that is for women leaders to emphasize that not only are they Americans, but they're, you know, African Americans or Indian Americans or Palestinian Americans. And that is critical to who they are and what they want.
There would be no America without us, and we have to own that narrative. As a Muslim American, my lineage to this country goes back before the founding of this nation. Enslaved African Muslims who came here, then generations of immigrants who came here from all over the world. And we have to be able to own that narrative. And for me, I overcompensate this idea of being unapologetic because it's important to me and it's important to the next generation. I am going to be all of this. And it makes people in this country very uncomfortable. Maybe uncomfortable is an understatement. To the point where I also have received death threats. I have private security. But you know what? I am not going to allow people to intimidate or silence me, because when I am silenced, when other women of color are silenced, then our next generation gets silenced. Then our mothers are silenced. Then the women in our community are silenced. So we are going to take whatever comes because we have a responsibility to those that come after us.
Do you feel that some of the biggest challenges are coming from moving the centrist or right-wing Democrats more to the left, or standing up to a Republican Party, a conservative Republican Party, a Trump administration? Where are some of the hardest struggles coming from?
I'm not trying to convince white supremacists or avowed white supremacists or racists to embrace me. That's not my work. I'm trying to get centrist Democrats or people who actually are progressive at heart but think that there's some sort of palatable type of politics they have to play. We just showed them in this primary that progressives were running on abolish ICE, Medicare for all, on reproductive rights, on immigration, DACA, all this kinds of, quote, radical politics, free public college education. This country is hungry for progressive politics, innovators, bold, brave, unbossed people. So for me, I'm not trying to convince centrist Democrats. I'm putting them in a situation where their mindset becomes this. If we can't beat them, join them. And I think they're joining us a little bit more on the side. But one thing that I'm trying to also shift is that unity is not uniformity. We're not going to all agree in the progressive left. I don't agree with half the progressive left on a lot of things, right? Unity is about this idea that we believe everyone deserves to live a life of dignity in this country. And if we can just make that the baseline, we're going to disagree on some policies. Sometimes we're not going to support the same candidates in primaries. It's okay. That's the beauty of democracy. It's healthy. We'll be against each other in the primaries, and then when we get to the general, we're all on the same side. But, for example, I'm Palestinian. One of the most controversial kind of divisive issues in the progressive left is Israel-Palestine. Come to terms with my politics. This is what I believe. It doesn't mean you don't get to believe what you believe, but you have to come to terms with being in a movement with people like me. And I'm not going to change what I believe because it makes other people feel uncomfortable. We have to figure out how to be in space with one another to work on common issues. If you care about access to health care for all, what's the problem? You care about defending undocumented people? Let's do it. You want to end police brutality against black people? Let's work on it. And you know, on that issue, we're just not going to be at the same table.
Linda, you brought up a really important point, which is that we have had such a sea change in this country that we are consumed by everything Trump is doing to the detriment of what our military is doing in other countries. And unfortunately, militarism, war, the support of Israel against Palestinians is a two-party project and has been a two-party project. How important is it for us to connect the dots to our funding of militarism, which in turn defunds all of those important domestic policies that we need, and also is literally killing brown people elsewhere? We're not seeing enough of that.
We have to bring that conversation into the forefront. It's why Dr. Martin Luther King got assassinated when he started talking about militarism. Like, we have to understand, when he became an intersectional leader is when he got assassinated, because no one wanted to have that conversation. We have to understand that we can't fight for public schools in Chicago, opening of hospitals, talking about all these, you know, grave injustices, immigration, without talking about the billions of dollars we spend on military aid. I would rather, as a taxpayer, decide to fund public schools, right? To make sure everybody has access to health care, that we all have access to a higher education in this country. And we are now bringing back that conversation. And it's uncomfortable, but it has to be had.
Thank you so much, Linda Sarsour.
Linda Sarsour is the co-chair of the Women's March 2017, former executive director of the Arab American Association of New York. She was one of many speakers at the She the People Summit in San Francisco, September 20th. Special thanks to my co-host, Antonia Yuhas, and to KPFA Pacifica Radio for sponsoring this coverage. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.